across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. From our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. It is 6 past the hour. It is Friday, August 30th, 2024, 67 days until Election Day. And as always, a beautiful morning across Wisconsin, from wherever you're listening on the Civic Media Radio Network, through the Civic Media app, on social media, or by podcast. Nice to have you along here. I've got a question for you. Do you think Wisconsin's status as a swing state is as deep as ever, or do you think that the state leans more in one direction or the other? Specifically, coming off the Democratic National Convention last week, do you feel like Wisconsin, with Kamala Harris at the top of the ticket, is a bit more in play than it otherwise would have been? You may get that impression at the end of today's show. This is a special show that we've put together with some of the many Wisconsin voices that you could hear at the Democratic National Convention in Chicago, from delegates to elected officials to other allies who are in attendance. We talked to all kinds of people about the new presidential ticket, about President Biden's service to the country, about Tim Walz and Kamala Harris as a ticket together. And we have a lot of voices to share with you. We're going to hear from Tammy Baldwin in her excerpt from her speech at the convention, Assembly Democratic leader Greta Neubauer. We'll hear from Duff Martin, former teachers union head, Andrew Werthmann of the Eau Claire City Council. There's Scott Ross, Sachin Chetta, former state rep Janet Bewley. There is Melissa Schrader, who's been a longtime Democratic activist, talking about the role of women in the party, former party chair Mike Tate. We're going to visit with Jason Ray. Recall that he was the one calling the roll during that very special, very eclectic, very musical roll call of the states at the convention. We talked to Secretary of State Sarah Godlewski. We talked to Deb McGrath about whether the Democratic Party is united in the 3rd Congressional District coming out of the primary and taking on Republican incumbent Derek Van Orden. And we'll wrap things up hearing from a 16-year-old from Western Wisconsin who came to the convention as a guest. Her grandfather is a delegate, and we'll get her impression and whether, after seeing all this, she is enthused about the Democratic ticket and about the election overall, or has that teenage apathy that we hear about so often, which is really important for the number of new young voters that are out there. I'm optimistic that that apathy is not going to take root, because I think so many people, young voters included, understand, Lord knows they've heard it enough, about Wisconsin's status as a swing state. And it's important not just from the presidential race, but some very important races down ballot, as you're going to hear from Assembly Democratic leader Greta Neubauer of Racine when I caught up with her at the Democratic convention and talked about Wisconsin's special place in November.
So Wisconsin has always been important, and Wisconsin continues to be incredibly important. I think people across the state understand that they could decide an important legislative race that helps determine the majority in the assembly, perhaps a congressional, Tammy Baldwin, and then of course Kamala Harris's race. We are incredibly lucky in Wisconsin to be able to participate in so many important elections, and we have a huge responsibility because these races are probably going to be very close.
Tell us about some of the key assembly races and how things seem, you know, since the time that Kamala Harris became the presumptive nominee.
Absolutely. So, of course, we have a number of seats to flip this year, a couple that I will highlight that are right around that 50% mark. We've got Yiling Zhang running in Wausau. This is the 85th district. Yi is an incredible candidate. He has been in office since he was a teenager, and he would be our first Hmong representative. People in Wausau love Yi. They are so excited for him to represent them and have someone who really shares their values in the assembly. We've got Christy Welch running in Green Bay. She's here at the convention as the delegate. Christy comes from a manufacturing background. She is working so hard. She is knocking on a ton of doors, and we are really excited for her to represent areas of Brown County. And then who else will I mention? I'll mention Allison Page. Allison is running in Hudson. And she is a former nurse and a healthcare professional, school board member. Allison is just a fantastic candidate, and we are so excited to have these folks stepping up who are ready to govern, who want to be part of this historic moment in Wisconsin.
What is the message coming from Assembly Democratic candidates when it comes to economic issues and affording, you know, day-to-day life?
Absolutely. We know that many families in Wisconsin are having a difficult time making ends meet, and it is our job to do something about that. While Assembly Democrats tried to lower the cost of prescription drugs and childcare, while we looked at real solutions to housing challenges and wanted to pass a tax cut that was actually focused on the middle class, Republicans really refused to engage with us on those issues. They wanted to pass tax cuts that benefited the wealthiest Wisconsinites, and they just simply are not willing to get to work for the people of this state.
Last one will be about the constitutional amendments that went down, and you had Robin Voss and others essentially saying, well, we're going to double down and keep going that avenue. Is your message kind of like, you know, good luck with that?
Yes. So Robin Voss has made clear that he would like to do constitutional amendments on two things. One is an abortion ban, and the second is enshrining voter ID into state law. Robin Voss will do everything he can to restrict the rights and freedoms of people of our state and to consolidate his own power. And we have seen that time and again, and he is saying that that's his plan moving forward. If we send him back with a majority in the Assembly, we know exactly what he will do. It's time for us to move in a new direction. And the people of Wisconsin made really clear on primary day this August that they are tired of Republican power grabs and that they actually want people who are doing the work for the people of our state.
Greta Neubauer, thank you very much.
Thanks for
having
me.
So Election Day, of course, has significance at the federal level. Who's going to be in the White House for the next 4 years? And there's a lot to say about the state level, as Greta Neubauer just did. But let's not forget the local level of government and how the person who's in the White House really does make a difference in county courthouses, town halls, city halls, and school districts all across the country. For more about that, I talked to Eau Claire City Council member Andrew Werthmann, who was attending the convention as a delegate.
Part of what I'll first point out is the fact that, you know, policies from the Biden administration are already directly helping in our local communities. And I think about ARPA funds and the way that we've been able to invest in affordable housing. I think about the funds that we've gotten for PFAS remediation through our state government, through our federal government. And I think about our addressing climate change and just sort of the challenge that we have there through the Inflation Reduction Act. We've seen a series of policies that 100% are the things that kind of help communities like Eau Claire move forward. And I expect in a Harris-Walz administration that they will double down on that idea of investing both in affordable housing, in our public schools, in making sure that our environment is clean, our air and water is clean. And, you know, sort of helping our community take that next step. Healthcare is another huge issue, and you know it, Pat, through all of the things that have happened in Western Wisconsin. Healthcare access is something that we've heard a lot about in this convention. So those are the real policies that help, you know, people's lives, daily lives back in my community.
And to the extent that this isn't just a federal matter, but a state matter, with Governor Evers using the ARPA funds in a way that targeted things at the local level rather than, say, you know, tax cuts or something like that, can you tell me about the importance of having state leaders who are also looking out for the local levels of government?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly right. And it's from ARPA funds to even, you know, the forestry grants that we've been getting to help us make sure that we're you know, removing old dead and dying ash trees and planting new trees in our community. Those have all of these things have real life consequences, and leadership in Madison that can make a difference for that, you know, absolutely sets the course for what we do in a local community.
All right, so we've covered the importance of the November election at the federal, state, local level. I did mention school districts before, so let's meet with Duff Martin, the former head of the Wisconsin Education Association Council. He's now on the national board of the National Education Association, and I started by asking him at the convention about Project 2025, that Republican blueprint for a second Trump term, and the significance of one of its big points, abolishing the U.S. Department of Education.
Well, I think it'd be really dangerous because the Department of Ed helps to facilitate so many of the wonderful federal grant programs that are available to our schools, the lunch programs, the breakfast programs, many of the title programs. So it's imperative that we have somebody who has oversight, making sure that states are administering and doing the things that they're supposed to be doing. But more importantly, the Office of Civil Rights that's located within the Department of Education to make sure that we're addressing inequities, inequalities that exist in so many of our schools. So that there's an avenue for somebody who feels that something's been done to them wrong, that they have an avenue to make sure there's accountability.
Well, let me seize right on that, because we know the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty has been bringing cases against school districts or making noises about these kinds of investigations. It sounds like there's something downright hostile about looking into allegations that there's inappropriate, even illegal behavior in our school districts.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things that really disturbs me about Wisconsin Law and Liberty is they're not taking the facts. I think law is supposed to be rely on facts, and they're not. They're going with the hostile, as you mentioned, the hostile environment, creating something that does not exist to fire up that small base. It has nothing to do with really what's going on in their eyes, and that it's very dangerous.
What differences could voters realistically hope for, or educators realistically hope for, if November goes very well for Democrats?
I think we would definitely see a change in the funding for our public schools. We would see less referenda just to pay the bills. We'd see investment in our schools, particularly our rural schools, that need so much of that funding that they're not getting. We'd maybe see a decrease, at least my hope is, in vouchers, which is hurting our public schools because we're not able to give the funds that are needed and necessary. And so those two will have an incredible impact if the legislature is changed.
Final question, getting a teacher on the ticket.
Oh.
Talk about that.
That's just a dream. A teacher who is so, just so real, so authentic. You know, when he talked about why he looks a little older than what people think he is, because he did 20 years in the lunchroom, well, I know what he's going through because I did 20 years in a middle school lunchroom at South Middle School where I was a lunchroom supervisor. He's just a relatable kind of person. People like him, know him. He's authentic. He's real. He's an educator, and that's incredible.
Let's pause here, and when we come back, we'll hear from Scott Ross and Sachin Jetta. Wherever you're listening across Wisconsin, when you're here, you're up north. From Lake Wasota on the Civic Media Radio Network.
I know and believe in an America where honesty, dignity, decency still matter. An America where everyone has a fair shot and hate has no safe harbor.
There was President Biden giving the speech, not the speech he'd originally planned, not on the night he had originally planned, but still, as delivered, receiving the heartfelt accolades of convention delegates and, frankly, a nation that is ready to turn the page for a new generation of leadership, while at the same time respecting people like Joe Biden for their service. Years of service, decades of service. That's how our conversation began with Scott Ross, who's a political analyst these days. I knew him when he was leading the old Group One Wisconsin Now, and we had a chance to talk in Chicago.
So much enthusiasm, and you know, most importantly, like the political capstone to 50 years of Joe Biden's public service to the United States of America. It was wonderful. The fact that he put country first, as he always does, and created, again, a stark reminder of the difference between Kamala Harris and Donald Trump. Kamala Harris is for us, joy and happiness back in politics. Donald Trump's in it for himself.
What do you think of the change in narrative of, whether Joe Biden is too old versus a narrative that is now back focused on
on public service, including what Joe Biden's was and what he did and what Kamala Harris wants to do.
Oh, exactly. I mean, again, it's about competence, you know, and we restored competence to the White House when Joe Biden became president. You know, he has worked his ass off, 16 million more jobs, 21 million more people have access to health care, you know, $7 billion for Wisconsin alone in infrastructure, and 4.75 million people having their student loan, you know, taken away after paying for years and years and years. So we restored competence, and like they're going to say until November 5th, we're not going back.
The theme from the Trump-Vance campaign, especially with visits to Kenosha and Howell, Michigan, appears to be around that old buzz phrase, law and order. What should people really know about the Trump-Vance campaign when they're using that kind of messaging?
Well, obviously, there was never a more corrupt administration in the history of United States presidents than Donald Trump's. And I think the crescendo of that is the 34 felony counts he has so far. You know, couple that with J.D. Vance. J.D. Vance received the largest campaign contribution in American history, $15 million, from German venture capitalist Peter Thiel, who wants to end democracy. He's bought and paid for, Trump's bought and paid for by Wall Street, and he's rewarded them. You know, we got $2 trillion of unpaid tax cuts for rich people and corporations under Trump. He wants to extend that to be another $5 trillion that you, me, and everybody out there are going to pay for.
Well, there's all this messaging going to moderate or undecided swing voters, whatever you want to call them, and there is still the line that this is all a political persecution of Donald Trump. What message needs to go to those voters?
Well, first of all, the message to those what I believe are suburban swing women is exactly the message you heard over and over last night. You know, the brave women who told their stories about having, you know, in babies that were going to die inside of them, that they had to take them to term because of the overturning of Roe versus Wade, about doctors who are afraid to perform, you know, their knowledge because of six Republican Supreme Court justices, three of whom, you know, under Trump, all three who are, you know, literally illegitimate Supreme Court justices.
You had a bit of a slogan at the old One Wisconsin Now, that used a word that so many Democrats and progressives shied away from, but you guys didn't mind using the L word. What was that tagline again?
Yeah, we're a liberal group. We do liberal things.
A liberal, you know, again, group that does liberal things.
You know, classic liberalism is, you know, classic conservatism is believe that the free market can solve everything, and liberalism is about whether, you know, what government's there to solve problems that are inherent in a free market system, and that's what we should be doing, investing in people. And again, that's what Joe Biden did. You know, he and Kamala Harris's you know, Inflation Reduction Act, the American Rescue Act, all those things that put money into Wisconsin, that made sure that we not only saved America, but that we're thriving and prospering. And, you know, inflation is down to, you know, levels that were under George Bush. You know, all seven G7 countries have higher inflation than us. And people are like, what's the difference between them and us? We had Joe Biden and Kamala Harris' Inflation Reduction Act. That's the difference. And that's the difference when Democrats are in office.
But Republicans will continue to claim that it was all that spending that's what drove inflation. We hear that from Eric Hovde repeatedly. Is that something that is a narrative that is going to be tough for Democrats to counter with what you just said?
Listen, the only thing Eric Hovde knows about money is how to inherit it. You know, that's the bottom line on it. The fact is that there was a lot of pent-up spending that was going to happen because of the pandemic. So people were spending. Couple that with the fact that all these industries that the American people helped bail out during COVID started gouging all of us. Record profits for oil companies, record profits for, you know, grocery stores and their corporate chains. I mean, again, these aren't small mom and pop operations. These are the biggest corporations on the planet, which also happen to own our media. So of course, ergo, they're going to be towing that Republican line, which is what they always do. Inflation is tough, but it's under control, and it's under control because Joe Biden and Kamala Harris made the right moves. If this was under Trump, it'd be pushing triple digits.
As I listened back to the conversation, I realized I'd fallen into a trap that we call out many other journalists for, framing questions primarily around Donald Trump and saying, react to this or react to that. Though I have to say that was rather intentional on my part with Scott Ross, because he is the person you want to go to say, what is the appropriate argument back when any Republican says X, Y, or Z? And you heard him say that on a number of different matters. It's why he's so good at what he does. I also got to talk to campaign veteran Sachin Shetty. And we talked about the unanimity at the Democratic convention and what a different look that is compared to times when some folks on the political left would look past the best available option in hopes of something even more. Of course, I'm talking about years like Al Gore in 2000 and Hillary Clinton in 2016.
I think it's a real lost opportunity. And I think back to the year 2000, I think back to 2016, where I think a handful of voters, some voters, really made the perfect the enemy of the good. And so instead of taking steps forward, maybe not the big steps forward that they wanted, but taking steps forward, we instead took massive steps backward in our country, whether we're talking about equality, generating income for families, helping people in need succeed, building wealth and home ownership, all the things, obviously bad foreign policy decisions. The Trump years were chaotic. I think many more people died during COVID because of the lack of leadership from the top. Obviously, the economy crashed. It took years longer to recover from that. I think, obviously, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris have done a tremendous job, but their job got harder. And I think what we need to see is a country where we're moving the ball forward every time. That doesn't mean that it's always going to be a Democrat. A Republican can win and you can move the ball forward, but not what we've seen over the last 20 or 25 years, and especially not what we've seen in the Trump era. And so I really do think that we have to turn the corner on these kind of insane politics, the conspiracy driven politics, and really just get back to kind of policy disagreements, but everybody pulling in the same direction, supporting public education, supporting home ownership, making sure we do something about the climate emergency, making sure that people have access to health care. We can fight on the margins, but we got to be driving forward on those things.
And that was Sachin Shetty. Don't forget, you can sign up for our newsletter, put out every weekday morning, bright and early. Sign up over at our website, that's upnorthnewswi.com. Don't forget the WI. Click subscribe up in the top banner. Coming up next, three delegates from up north and the idea to turn the Apostle Islands into a national park. This is Up North News Radio on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back to a special edition of Up North News Radio. As we look back at last week's Democratic National Convention, we talked to so many Wisconsin delegates and wanted to share as many of their voices as possible, so we thought we'd pack a lot of them into this one special episode. We heard from three women attending the convention on behalf of their home counties up north to discuss in part the new legislative maps that undo years of Republican cheating. But we also assessed a proposal from Republican Congressman Tom Tiffany to turn the Apostle Islands National Lakeshore into a national park. And true to form, Tiffany's proposal appears meant to benefit developers, not the natural resources. And for that discussion, we talked to Mary Hayes from Ashland-Bayfield Counties. She chairs the Democratic Party up there. Former State Representative Janet Bewley from Bayfield. And from Lincoln County, we talked to longtime party leader Melissa Schrader.
It is fantastic. Every day seems to get better. I was surprised, but not surprised, to see Andy Beshear and Mark Kelly. There's just so many that are coming through Wisconsin, which is why we are the battleground state. They need to be here, and they know it.
And what do you think a Harris-Walz administration would mean for the economy of northern Wisconsin, for jobs and housing and healthcare, things like that?
Well, farm issues come first and foremost, and the fact that they're also looking at a clean environment, teachers, education, having Tim Walz on the ticket is absolutely fabulous, because northern Wisconsin is not like southern Wisconsin, in so much that there are so many small schools closing because of lack of funding. They're losing those funding sources to voucher and charter schools, and there are a lot of schools that are closing down or consolidating or losing programs. Kids aren't able to have as many different opportunities to the arts because of the cuts.
Have the new maps, I mean, we know that rural Wisconsin's been a tough territory for a little while, but has it changed some of the conversation about how some of the legislative races may go?
Yes. Not so much in my area, because I'm on the eastern side of Wisconsin. You know, my districts didn't change that much. However, up in the northwestern part of this, is it used to be a blue area, and we could count on that. But when the maps were redrawn, they weren't blue, and they went red. And now we have a chance of regaining at least 3, maybe 4 seats in the assembly because of those changes. And that's fantastic. That helps Governor Evers. It helps all of us.
And now I'm joined by former State Senator Janet Buley. Janet, how are you?
I'm great. What a wonderful place to see you, Pat.
You know, when we talk about what's different this year, along with the enthusiasm and the change in the ticket, you have to talk about new maps. And you can't talk about new maps without talking about the way that things have been, shall we say, maybe made right in the northwest corner of Wisconsin. Can you explain to people what Republicans did with the maps and what the new maps, how the new maps are different?
This is a district that is all of the most of the northern shore of Lake Superior. So it's Ashland, Bayfield, and Douglas, which includes Superior. So it's a great seat. The Senate district, I think, is still winnable. I've never won by more than 2 points, so I think when the right person comes along, we're going to be able to defeat Romain Quint.
Well, what a difference it was for that area, Ashland, Bayfield, around Superior, to be so heavily Democratic, but for quite a time have no Democratic representation because of the way they moved the districts, moved the lines downward to capture more red territory. I don't know that any other map in the state says political mischief more than that one did.
Well, and that's very true. And it was an extremely frustrating thing for candidates. If you just look at my Senate district, within that there would have been 3 assembly seats. Right now, there is a seat that is actually Democrat. We have not had that, for as long as I know, as long as I have been involved in politics. So we are able to get a candidate who is going to win that seat and be able to have the voice to represent a stronger liberal platform. And it'll make a huge difference. You know, we are able to recruit people to run for office, and they are told, you know, you've got to look at this as the long game. But to consistently recruit people for a seat that they have to fight tooth and nail, and then they lose by just a couple of points, that is really, really hard to keep doing. But now that's all different. We've got new maps, and the woman, Angela Stroud, is running for that district, and she's going to win.
There can be such a difference with these new maps, with the type of legislators involved. It still sounds like a very tall order, but in terms of Medicaid expansion, how much better do you like the odds that Wisconsin would no longer be one of now, what, 9 or 10 states that has yet to expand Medicaid, depending on the results this November?
Well, one of the things that's happening now, you can take an issue like Medicaid expansion and you can say it again. And when you're saying it in this environment of educating voters and having them really understand the issues, I think people are going to realize what Wisconsin has gone without for so long. The ability to expand what Medicaid can do for people, along with the messages that Kamala Harris is going to have, I think is going to make a big difference, and people are going to demand that we accept the Medicaid expansion.
Last one has to do with natural resources up north. We've talked about mining, we've talked about PFAS contamination. We have a Republican-led legislature that has been holding PFAS money for over a year now. What are your hopes that whatever the composition of the next legislature, they can do or stop doing when it comes to protecting natural resources up north?
Well, again, up north there is a very strong ethic to protect natural resources. But when you come along and have strong Republicans beat the other drum on being able to make it easier for businesses, being able to open new factories or mines without the protections of strong laws, You pit person against person. You commit, we've got strong unions who want the jobs, but they also want to be able to stand up for the environment. It's a very subtle and a very important argument to make that the environmental and the union and creating jobs can coexist. And I think, again, the more we repeat it, the more people are going to see it in action.
Former State Senator Janet Bewley, thank you for joining us on Up North News. All right, now I'm visiting with
Mary Hayes. I'm chair of the Schwamigan Democratic Party, which represents Ashland and Bayfield counties. I'm also honored to be a delegate here at the convention.
You know, we were chatting during the Wisconsin delegation breakfast here about one of the issues that frankly hasn't gotten enough attention because of everything else that's been going on these days, and it deals with the Apostle Islands National Lakeshore and a proposal by Congressman Tom Tiffany to consider, what, turning it into a national park?
That's correct.
Which I think to a lot of people sounds intriguing. It also sounds counterintuitive to Tom Tiffany, and it always felt like there was more to the story. What is it that people who don't live up in Ashland Bayfield counties need to know about this idea?
Well, what people need to know is there's a distinct difference between a national lakeshore and a national park. A national park allows certain levels of development. And you'll note in Representative Tiffany's work that Sandy Island in the Apostle Islands is left out of the national park, which would allow it to be developed for condominiums. It could be mined if we found some kind of minerals there. And honestly, you know, Mr. Tiffany has always been a proponent of opening up public lands. He's kind of in the hip pocket of developers. And this whole process was done in a way that lacked a lot of transparency. And it certainly did not involve the people of Bayfield County, the city of Bayfield, which that's the entree point to the Apostle Islands. So there's many, many issues involved here that Mr. Tiffany has not addressed.
So what is the current status of it? And are we at the point where people can take some kind of action to weigh in on it yet?
Yes, I think people can weigh in, particularly in Bayfield County. The Bayfield County Board of Supervisors is developing a resolution right now. They're looking for citizens to have input on it around this whole idea. And frankly, from what I've read, they are against this proposal for many reasons. There's no funding. Additional funding for the National Park Service to be able to do this. There's been no transparency. There are sovereign tribal rights involved in the Apostle Islands, let alone the fact that it is land that is sacred to our Red Cliff and Bad River neighbors. And there has been really no discussion economically about how the small towns of Washburn, Bayfield, Red Cliff, and others would even handle the extra traffic, transportation, let alone affordable housing for people who would have to, you know, start to live in our area since we have such a lack of it now. So there's lots of discussion.
So let's talk about what elected officials could be doing rather than proposing that. And let's say rather than the status quo, what is it that folks up there would like to see either a member of Congress doing or members of the legislature doing that would enhance the resources and the economy of that part of the North?
Well, I think the North is much like a lot of the rural parts of Wisconsin. Affordable housing is a big deal. And we're particularly challenged because since the pandemic, a lot of people with cash have come in and purchased what would have been a first-time homebuyer's home. And now they're renting them out as Airbnbs. And so it has continued to deplete the resource for locals. So already, you know, Senator Baldwin provided through some of her legislation over $1 million for a new affordable housing development in Ashland on the east side of the city. So more of those kinds of things are needed. I know that our Bayfield County Board of Supervisors is doing a full review of their planning and zoning rules to see what they can do to make them less cumbersome and costly for developers, but then also still guide developers in a way that is sustainable and is something that, you know, folks that live in the region would agree, yeah, this is a good thing.
So what did it mean to have a presidential candidate in Kamala Harris say last week that she would make it a priority to drastically increase the amount of affordable housing stock around the country, which is surely not just a city suburban thing, but all parts of the country?
Yeah, I think it's huge. And I really, I'm really hopeful about this. This is, you know, this is a woman who cares and understands the depth of the issues in rural America, which is what I represent. Affordable housing, affordable health care, childcare. Childcare is a big issue for us in the North, and public education. School vouchers don't help rural America because we use public schools, and rightfully so. That's where our children go to school. So to know that she wants to increase funding to public schools, all of those things put together is what raises up our middle class and makes our small towns and communities that much more viable for the future.
Now, we should note that Congressman Tiffany did have an opinion column recently in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel saying that he would make sure that a bill to turn the Apostle Islands into a national park would have specific language making clear that treaty rights took priority. Still, a lot of local folks there wonder if all of the infrastructure and resources there could handle a big increase in tourist traffic. We'll continue our special hearing voices from the Democratic National Convention coming up on Up North News Radio on the Civic Media Radio Network.
How do you cast your vote?
Yeah! Ladies and gentlemen, we are here tonight to officially nominate Kamala Harris for president. Five, get out, another round of shots. DHC, turn out for what?
Oh yeah, there it was. That's how it went down in Chicago at the Democratic National Convention, a roll call the likes of which had never been seen before, adding a DJ, individual songs for every state, appearances by rappers like Lil Jon and others, and presiding over it all, Rice Lake's own Jason Ray. We'll talk to him in a minute about being one of the youngest people to get active in the Democratic Party, but Mike Tate was another one. He became party chair for a while in the state of Wisconsin, so I've talked to both of them about how young people should feel very much welcome to come participate, learn about the political process, and get started volunteering.
Former party chair Mike Tate joins us now. Mike, do you feel less pressure being able to attend this, not as somebody who's kind of half running the show?
Yes. I mean, I'll tell you, it's great to come to party events when you're no longer in charge. And, you know, if you're a state party chair, you've got, however many delegates there are, they're sort of all your children and you got to take care of them for the week. But I think Ben and his team are doing a great job.
I actually want to go off the board here and ask you a question about being young and active, because you were really young.
I used to be young and active.
You used to be really young and active.
Yeah.
But we were watching Jason Ray up on the podium last night. He started at 17. You started when?
I started at about 19.
Okay.
But I remember Jason Ray running for the DNC spot at convention. He had handmade signs. He was 17 years old. He was from Rice Lake. He was running against the state president of the firefighters. Nobody took him seriously. He's just this kid. The firefighters president sat in the bar at the state party convention, and Jason put up handmade signs, shook every hand, got elected the youngest DNC member in the country, and then, you know, does his duty and is now, you know, last night calling the roll call as the secretary of the DNC. It's a pretty awesome Wisconsin story.
So, I mean, not everybody follows the same path. You had your own path.
Yep.
What would you say to 18, 19, 20-year-olds? Like, where would they start? Because it sounds like you guys started pretty high, but where could you start?
You know what, though? We didn't. I mean, I got involved in the College Democrats when I was in college in 1998. I wandered into a rally. I went to UWM for a year and a half before I transferred to Madison, and John Richards and Mark Pocan, who were both running for their first term in the state legislature. Mark's now in Congress. John's a judge in Milwaukee. And I signed a sheet of paper, and I showed up to volunteer a few times, and I was nervous and alone and, you know, scared. And then I just got involved, and I got elected the state college Dems chair at 20 years old, which sounds cool, but was not that hard to do. You know, you just had to work at it, and I loved it. I went voraciously at it. I was so excited to do that work. And, you know, through tremendous great opportunities and fortune, I ran about 3 or 4 statewide campaigns, did a bunch of other stuff, and I got elected state party chair 10 years later at 30. So, I mean, it is a party that rewards hard work, rewards youth, and it is just, it's been an amazing experience for me.
Is there a signature issue or issues that you think are going to tip the balance when Wisconsin goes one way or the other in November?
Well, look, I mean, we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about, you know, women's reproductive health issues. I think it's something that affects not just women, but men in almost every age group. I mean, it's hard to get to 40 years old and not know someone who's had a crisis pregnancy, or if a woman have experienced that yourself and sort of the repercussions of that. But I also think that, you know, this is really, we're seeing two different visions of America, and we have a choice to make. And it's sort of this, you know, we can choose to be optimistic and forward looking and hopeful about the future, or we can choose to have this sort of dark, dystopian, ugly view of America that I think the other side's providing. And should be a lot of talk about costs, a lot of talk about the price of groceries, a lot of talk about housing, all of which are important, incredibly important issues. But I think this is going to come down to substance as well as style. And I really like where the Democratic Party's positioned right now.
It's really nice to talk about being for something, not just against something.
Oh my gosh. I mean, you know, I work with a number of young people now myself, and that day, that Sunday morning, before President Biden announced he wasn't running again, all those young people got up to beat Donald Trump, right? And that's great. They woke up on Monday morning to elect Kamala Harris, and there's a difference, Pat. And it is a huge deal, and the enthusiasm that we've seen at all levels of the party is tremendous.
Mike Tate, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks.
Jason Ray is with us now. Jason Ray is the happiest man in Chicago, Illinois this week, aren't you?
I'm one of the happiest, that's for sure. I think the United Center is full of happy folks right now, though.
How far in advance did you know that the roll call was going to maybe play out the way that it did?
You know, I was in a couple meetings in advance of getting here to Chicago to talk about it. I mean, our production team did a phenomenal job building and planning what turned out to be a phenomenal event. And I was just honored to be a part of it, frankly.
So is there any, like, was there one brainchild to this who said, hey, what about this idea? Or was it by committee, do you think?
You know, there was a really good production team that we have who's been spending months figuring out what happened in the United Center here in Chicago to really say, how do we take this and tell the story of Kamala Harris and Tim Walz to the American people and to reach as many folks as we can?
It was just electric. And I haven't heard a single unkind word about it.
Everyone I've talked to has absolutely loved it. It was so energizing in the hall. I actually could barely hear most of the speakers as they were casting their votes. I heard just enough to make the record, but I had to go back and watch it myself because there was so much enthusiasm for our ticket. And that's the thing that's inspired me about this week. And it's why I loved every moment of there up on the podium.
And this is part of a journey for you that began quite some time ago. I interviewed Mike Tate yesterday, and we talked about being young and active and taking part and why you did that. So now it's your turn. Why'd you do that?
I mean, I always believed that being involved in the Democratic Party was what was going to make a difference in my community, that if I could elect folks who cared about my values, who shared my opinions, that I could make a difference in my country, in my world. And that's what I've been doing. And it inspired me when I was 17 to go to county party meetings, to run for the DNC, and here 20 years later to get the true privilege of my lifetime to serve as secretary of the party.
I think that still so many people don't understand the county party structure, that there is this actually really easy local way for people of any age, including young, to get involved.
Oh, absolutely. Our county party structure in Wisconsin in particular, it's really vibrant and strong. These county party chairs are dedicated volunteers who are organizing, and they get great turnout. They are turning up votes. And I think what's really important to remember is, even if it's not the bluest of counties, it still matters, because every additional vote that turns out in any county in Wisconsin goes a long way at the top of the ticket to helping elect Democrats.
There was Jason Ray, and bet your bottom dollar that there's going to be a trickle-down effect here. It's not just for the national convention anymore. The party planners behind the next state convention, maybe your next work retreat, they're going to be looking for ways to make things not quite so boring and ordinary after seeing a show like that in Chicago. In our second hour of our Up North News Radio special, Wisconsin Voices from the Democratic National Convention, we'll hear from Senator Tammy Baldwin's speech at the convention, talk to Secretary of State Sarah Godlewski, and a 16-year-old granddaughter of a delegate talks about how Kamala Harris on the ticket has changed her perspective, coming up on the Civic Media Radio Network.